What's up, everybody? Ulysses Butch Slaughter here with Ulysses Presents Sex and the Struggle. This is Exploring Intimacy with Tazima Davis. I got my sister friend, Tazima Davis, on the line, and she is going to make some stuff happen in this half an hour. She's going to make some things happen in this half an hour that most people can't make happen in 30 years. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to turn the mic over to my sister, Tazima. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice.
Thank you so much for having me. This Exploring Intimacy show is really, it's opening up so many conversations, not just inside of the show, but sort of outside in my life and with my clients. And I love watching the process of unfolding. It's really fun for me because I'm getting more and more opportunities to see my work from different angles. So this, you know, during these shows, we'll be talking a little bit about theory, and we'll be talking, of course, about some actual examples. I tend to, as Ulysses knows very well, and as you'll begin to know through these sessions, is that I tend to share from myself and from examples that are pretty vulnerable. And I think that's one of the most important pieces of beginning to cultivate intimacy is the willingness to be vulnerable. And I feel so much closer to the people in my life after having learned some of this stuff. One of the things that's really been coming up recently for me has been actually this idea of in some of the personal development work that I've been doing, I've been tackling the idea of what it means to be bad. And when I say bad, I mean like what was against the rules in my life. And one of the big things that was against the rules as I was growing up was things like full self-expression, my emotions and expressing all of my emotions, saying the truth when it was not diplomatically appropriate. So all of these kinds of things actually put a bunch of sort of brakes on my expression. And unfortunately, the cost of that was that I ended up not having as much intimacy as I would have liked. And then the other piece of this idea of intimacy and expressing and all of that is that I spent several years, and some of those years was with an organization where I met Ulysses. And so I had been gathering, you know, my whole life, you know, basically I had been gathering all this information about sex and like anatomy and, you know, dynamics of sexual conversations or sexual intercourse or, you know, negotiating sex. And so I had all this stuff, this technical information, but I didn't have the emotional information. So it's kind of crazy that for me, emotional intimacy was the final frontier. I had gone all the way with physical intimacy, you know. Information and knowledge was only part of the picture. So I'm not saying that we need to do one or the other, that it's not about the sex. Of course it's about the sex. Oh, it's not, you know, it's about your feeling. Yeah, it's about that. It's about all of it. So as I promised, today I want to go over this quote that I dropped, according to Ulysses, that I dropped at the last minute in the session last time. And I want to revisit this quote and start talking about it a little bit more. So the book that I'm reading from is called Passionate Marriage. It's by David Snarch. He's a beast when it comes to committed relationships. Okay, he supports people who are in marriages, and this one is all about marriages and how to keep them passionate. The subtitle on this book is Keeping Love and Intimacy Alive in Committed Relationships, which actually is one of the final frontiers, I think, for our society, especially when we've got 50% of marriages ending in divorce, and it's more likely to end in divorce if it's your second or third marriage. So marriage is a pretty unstable situation, considering it is supposed to be as allegedly the backbone of our society, to in a moment. But first, I want to set the tone of our conversation here with this quote. So he starts by saying most authors and therapists believe, or he said many authors and therapists believe, that couples gradually achieve the degree of intimacy they want through accumulated experiences of mutual trust, acceptance, empathy, validation, and reciprocal disclosure. And I remember, Ulysses, you were like, yeah, that's exactly how it goes. And I know a lot of people out there they believe, I mean, it's the common assumption.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say, ironically, intimacy seems to develop through conflict, self-validation, and unilateral disclosure. So I really want to start by tackling these ideas. And by the way, in the text, he actually has this, the conflict, self-validation, and unilateral disclosure. All of those are italicized for emphasis. So before I wax poetic on these ideas, I'd actually like for you to jump in, Ulysses, and give me your initial thoughts on this, or review what you're getting right now.
Well, the first thing is I was convinced that you were following me around with some kind of drone for the last week, that you must be like all in my business. I don't know how the hell it happened, but I'm looking around the room right now to see if there's a hidden camera or some shit around here, because you all in my business right now. As soon as you mentioned his name, you know, I went and pulled it up. So I'm looking at a couple of websites, Passionate Marriage website, looking at a couple of other things related to David Snarch. And for those that are listening, his name is spelled S-C-H-N-A-R-C-H. That's Dr. David Snarch. I've been talking about intimacy all morning, Tazima. Just this morning alone, I've been talking about it. But I've been talking about it since you and I left one another last week with the last podcast. And I think a lot about this thing of intimacy. I wonder if you could tell me just a quick thought around when we're talking about relationships of a romantic kind, of, you know, partner relationships, tell me how you would what are the ingredients? And I know you're probably going to get to this, but I just wonder, what are those ingredients of intimacy that a person should be able to recognize in across the board, so to speak? I mean, I get that there's no one size fits all relationship, but what are the qualities? What are the ingredients of intimacy?
Yeah. So one thing I want to say about that, I have it tagged and flagged to get into, is this idea of chemistry. So I actually want to put the idea of chemistry off the table right now. Because some people are like, well, it's all about the chemistry, you know, and we're going to delve into that in the next show. So I want y'all to stay tuned for that, because it's going to be awesome. But this idea of chemistry, let's table that for the moment. But I don't want to talk about chemistry just yet, but that's one of the main things that people think is an ingredient to intimacy, because it's not actually. And that brings me to the other part of relationship, which is where people say things like, you know, in my practice, I have a lot of people who have been hurt, you know, so I don't just deal with people who are in relationship. I deal with people who have been in relationship and who want to get into a long-term committed relationship again. And so there are some people, I've heard it so many times, where they're like, oh, I want to heal before I get into a relationship again. I want to make sure that I'm clear, and I want to be a whole person, and la la la, and then I can get into a relationship. And the challenge with that, I've got the ingredient, your ingredient query on the table, so I'm going to deal with it. But I do want to make sure to let the folks know that it's not actually about getting prepared. There are certain things, sure, like you can address, like, yeah, I really got hurt by, you know, a series of people in my life. Sure, that violence that happened in my relationship, you know, in my relationship with my parents or at home when I was growing up. Yeah, that those things were hard. Okay, so yes, those things happened. Yes, you had a string of people who abandoned you, or yes, you had a string of whatever it was, whatever the story was. The challenge is that it really, the relationship depends on who you are dealing with. This is one of the gifts that I talk about, of when I used to see a bunch of people. I'm currently monogamous, but I was in open relationships for several years. And what I discovered during that time is that my relationship with each person with whom I was involved was a different relationship. It wasn't like I showed up as the same person. And the thing was, I wasn't being like some inauthentic version of myself when I was
right.
with my primary partner, and when I was with my lover, or when I was with my other lover. Like, it wasn't about like me, you know, it wasn't about me showing up differently for each of those. It was that the connection that I had with that person was a different connection because we were two different people.
Right.
I couldn't recreate what I had with my lover with my primary because they're just two different people. So this mm-hmm. idea of preparing before you're in relationship with someone, there's certain stuff you just won't even get until you're actually in relationship, until you actually are grinding with the person, whether that's, you know, in an argument or whether you got pelvis to pelvis and you're grinding, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
it's like you got to recognize that some of the relationship is created when you two are together or when you're interacting, when you're actually engaged, and it won't happen prior to that.
I think about that a lot.
Get back to this ingredient.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up. No, I'm just glad that you brought that up because I hear that a lot. People saying things like, you know, I need some time alone. And time alone is one
mm-hmm.
thing. Time alone to prepare for somebody is something else. Time alone is just about internal work. Internal work will influence and help the relationship. But real time relationship stuff happens in real time. You cannot predict.
Mm-hmm.
Or prepare, nor should you even want to, I don't think. You really shouldn't be trying to dictate and know everything that's going to happen. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Completely. And you just have no idea. And that's actually the part of the adventure of relationship. That's actually part of what we're looking for in relationship.
Yep.
We want the mystery of like, I don't know what's going to happen. This is really exciting. And, you know, I had some thoughts and ideas about what I wanted, but like, this is way better. It's sort of like when you show up at Coney Island or you go to, you know, the you know, I went to Iowa this week with my partner. We did a little like 2-day local vacation sort of. I had some business out there. I met up with a colleague of mine and we made a presentation. It was really great. We had a lot of fun. So I talked about relationships in Iowa, and then I realized in Davenport, Iowa, and in the Quad Cities, that it's where we were staying was 15 minutes from the Mississippi. I didn't even know. So I hadn't planned to go to the Mississippi, but like on yesterday morning, I went to the Mississippi, and it's a fascinating body of water. It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's a massive, massive river. And just to be with that nature, it wasn't something that was on my docket or my plan to go check it out, but it happened. And so that's part of the adventure. So discovering the other person is really part of the adventure, which is gorgeous.
Excellent point. Excellent
but to get back to your, to get back to your question about who are the ingredients, I really think that the ingredients for intimacy are actually these pieces that I've just been mentioning, this conflict, self-validation, and unilateral disclosure. Because what we're talking about is, number one, you as a person, like we're made to connect. This is how we're built. Attachments, our attachments to one another, our attachments our first attachment is with our primary caregiver. For most people, that primary caregiver is their mother. That's their first primary care. It's the breast. It's the connection. It's the holding. It's, you know, that usually happens with the mother. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's someone else for different reasons. But the point being is that that first primary connection is something that hardwires us. And those hardwired, when I say hardwired, is our first set of wiring of how we connect with people. So whatever that relationship was with your mother, that's going to set the stage and your expectation for how it is with pretty much everybody else. The secondary, primary and secondary caregivers, or sometimes maybe your both parents were around, maybe you had an auntie or an uncle around who was also supporting and being there, or you had a grandmother or other grandparent being around. Those first relationships in our early lives is actually sets the stage, is what actually sets the stage with what we expect, what we think is normal. And I have one more quote for you. I don't think I've used this on your show, but I definitely have used this in talks before. But this one is particularly, I'm sorry, it's somewhat disturbing. I'm just going to let you know ahead of time.
Brace yourself, people.
It's hurtful. Brace yourself. It's a tough one, but it's all right. So this is from Virginia Satir.
Love her.
And yeah, she's super, super, super awesome. And
again, that is Virginia Satir. Her last name is Satir. She is well known in things like family functional therapy.
Yeah,
a giant in that area.
Awesome. Seriously, serious giant. Okay, so Virginia Satir, interesting. It's in the book The New People Making. But and I cannot find the quote right this minute, but I know that it says that without knowing it, oh, here it is. Okay, got it. Without knowing it, parents are the architects of their children's romantic and sexual selves. Familiarity exerts a powerful pull. So when they're getting down and having sex and they're connecting and they're in relationship with their romantic partner, usually they're not thinking about their parents. Usually. You're usually, if you're having sex with someone or you're in a sexual relationship with someone, you're not thinking about the way that, you know, your parents behaved around whether they hugged each other or not, whether they hugged you. But whatever happened from years 0 to 7, whatever you experience during those single-digit years is what you expect from all relationships. So in my world of intimacy, we were extremely jovial in my family. Like, everything was, like, very fun, very exciting, very very awesome most of the time. The food was really good. You know, my parents cared about each other. My parents were married for 30 years, so they, you know, well into my 20s, they were married. So, you know, I didn't come up with a broken home, so I had some examples of, you know, of being connected and being together in a home with two parents. And so during those single-digit years, everything was pretty cool. But what I didn't know until recently is that I wasn't really allowed to be around when, and this is nothing that anyone ever said to me, but if I were feeling sad or hurt or angry, like, I would have to spend some time, I don't even know if they said go to your room actively. I don't know that that was the case, but I felt that I should go away if I was feeling sad, and that I wasn't worthy of love until it was time for, you know, until I had gotten my face together. So if I had, if my face, my lip was poked out and I had a sad face on, that was unacceptable. And there's a lot of hurt. I felt a lot of hurt with that. And so for me to now, with my partner who I live with now, for us to be together and let him see me when I feel sad is huge work for me. It's huge work for me. Okay? So part of it that I have with him is actually recognizing, like, let myself be seen. Let myself be known. And that is what the part of what David Snarch was saying was the self-validation idea is actually, and unilateral disclosure is like, hey, I feel sad right now. I feel hurt by what happened just now. You know, when you said that thing, and that wasn't even about me in the particular case that I'm thinking of, I got super angry at my partner because, you know, growing up, he was like the cool guy. And growing up, I was like the goober, you know, that people made fun of. I wore glasses at a time when glasses weren't cool, you know. I'm telling you, I hate these kids who are wearing, like, nerd glasses. I'm like, fuck you guys. You guys don't know what it fucking feels like to actually be a fucking nerd. Fuck you.
You know, all that you went through for them to be able to do this is Nemo. They got the nerd to turn this shit into a fad. You know, back then
fucking
it wasn't cool. This shit is, look.
It was not cool. It was never fucking cool.
No, you were just before your time. Look at it that way.
Yeah, man. Revenge of the Nerds, we were still in pain, yo. That was a funny movie, but that was real, you know? that's Hollywood,
funny.
You know? I didn't have any happy endings like what the nerds did. So anyway, all right. I want to talk a little bit about, before I get to that, I just want to hear what you have to say, Ulysses, about these ideas of our parents and that kind of history and this stuff going way further back than just like the last couple of relationships.
I'm just listening to you again, and I'm telling you, you have to be following me, and I'm gonna keep an eye out for your ass from this day up to the next time we talk. I got my eye on you. I'm gonna be checking in to see where you are. You know, I might even GPS your ass because you're just all up in my business.
Right.
The whole thing of relationships. I guess as a father now, I think about my impact on my children. I'm thinking about, of course, my parents' impact on me, and I've been thinking about them a lot lately. All of my work is always around, has something to do with them. And so now I'm thinking of a couple of things that you said regarding the, the Virginia Satir quote reminds me of one that Joseph Campbell says in Hero with a Thousand Faces. He says that the father in particular is the initiating priest of the child. Now, that's a different kind of quote, but it still puts a lot of power in parental influence. And so I am very clear in a strange kind of way about I'm always thinking about my parents, no matter what I'm doing. And every now and then I am having sex and they come to mind for me. And it's like, oh, my God, really? Here? Come on, get the fuck out of here. but the influence of them on me and then my influence on my children, I'm always concerned about that because I know it's very, very, it's deep and it's true, Tazima, that they are looking at us. Mm-hmm. Just like we looked at our parents, and they're trying to figure some things out. And I really like what you said around, you know, you're not being able to show how you feel. You know, it's almost like you gotta be happy. That's some bullshit. It really is some bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I think about the way that I do my children sometimes. It's like, you know, that face. You could take that face someplace else. And that's a fucked up thing to do because what it means is that you're not accepted for feeling. I'm not going to accept your feelings right now. And the only way you can show up is if you show up happy. And so then the whole play begins where it's like now all of a sudden the only way I can be around you is if I'm happy, Dad. I can't show you the other shit. So, you know, it's good that you're bringing these things up because they're very important.
Right. Yeah. So revealing yourself is a huge, huge, huge piece of intimacy. It can't happen without you revealing the truth of who you are. And this goes to these three pieces. The unilateral disclosure instead of reciprocal disclosure is the thing that we when we're kids, you know, okay, now you take a turn and now you take a turn. This does not work for intimacy. I'm so sorry. This is not about playing nice together. And part of the problem with relationships is everybody wants to fucking play nice. And then you play nice so long that you don't actually know what the other person is feeling. And then as you don't know what the other person is feeling, then there's no truth in your relationship, which, by the way, means you don't have intimacy. As we consider things like this, all three of these pieces go together. Conflict, because by the way, when you say some shit that's true for you, you probably are going to fight about it. Most likely. It's not like you're just going to say something that's true for you, and then the person's going to be like, oh, okay, I understand. Thank you so much for letting me know. No, they're going to be like, well, what the fuck are you talking about? Or I didn't experience that situation at all in the way that you experienced it. And this is the conflict. The conflict happens because we care about something, okay? When we stand up for ourselves and we say something like, hey, what you said really hurt me, you know? Like I actually went completely irresponsible with my partner, and I said to, you know, he had explained, as I mentioned earlier, he was kind of a cool kid and I was kind of a nerd and the person that got made fun of. And so him being a cool kid, he said this thing to a different person, and then he fed back to me like what had happened, and I had determined that he had gone too far. He apologized, but then he did this thing where he kind of tried to relate to the person, and I'm like, you have no idea. And I actually like completely flew off the handle with him. Like I got super pissed and like screamed and called him all kind of assholes and fuck you and you're just a fucker. And I basically gave him everything that I had been feeling from all of the hurts that I had ever gotten for being like the not cool kid from the cool
kid.
Okay.
Wow.
And what is cool though about our relationship is that I like within the same breath of me finishing like the end of that like tirade, I was like, I am so sorry. That is not even about you. Like, and I just got back, you know, but being able to share all of that and then come back to, you know, this is actually what has to do with us and having that distinction. If I didn't disclose that to him, if we hadn't gotten into the conflict, he wouldn't have known me as much. And by the way, me standing up for myself, even though he was sort of a surrogate for all the hurts that he was a surrogate, like receiver for all of the hurt that I had before, I validated myself by saying what I believed in and where I got hurt. And the other part about the self-validation, it's not just about me like launching a rant on this man, but it's also about me recognizing, oh, this is not about you. Oh, this is about the actual hurt that I had in all of these other situations. That's also self-validation, where I recognize and I reclaim what's mine, and then I actually heal even more. And he basically didn't really have to even do anything. Like I kind of went off and had nothing to do with him. So that is, again, this unilateral disclosure. It's actually got nothing to do with him, okay? He might have had maybe 10% of the sensation that was in my body, 10% of, like, my reaction in that situation might have been caused by him, but the whole rest of the, you know, 100% that I gave him, that 90% was stuff that, the old stuff. So we got to recognize and take responsibility where we're overreacting and then communicate that as well. So it's not easy to do this. This is why I have a practice. This is why I take people through this stuff. This is why, like, and new stuff comes up in people's relationships where they're discovering, okay, now this is new information, and, you know, you got to adjust, but there's not one size fit all, and it's not like it's going to all get fixed just in one moment of interaction with your partner because you just decided to reveal something, okay?
That is just beautiful. I'm imagining. It is. I'm imagining, Tazima, the the importance of I don't know what to call it. They're not necessarily rules, but there has to be an intimacy understanding for moments like this, where you know people are you know patient with one another, and they get that there's something that's going on here, and I need to be aware of what's going on, and I need to, like, weather the storm is the best way I can put it, because after it settles, we're going to get down to the business of what's really going on, and this is part of what's really going on, so I'm not going to dismiss the storm, but I need to stick around long enough to figure out what the next move is going to be, you know, and this doesn't mean cut and run, it means stick around.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how intimacy happens, is that we go through the storm together. Because I promise you, the days that we've had these conversations and these fights or these unilateral disclosures, I share one of the first exercises that I do with my couples work when I do couples work together is I have the person each person reveal a withhold that they have from the person. And interestingly, sometimes the withholds that they have are like beautiful appreciation. So it's not always about like the conflict of like not sharing the like fucked up, scary thing to say. It's like sometimes it's like actual, like, I am afraid to share this appreciation with you. Like, It's fascinating. It's really, really, really interesting. So I recognize we're almost out of time, or out of time.
We're
but
just our, about
there. We're going to talk about chemistry next week, and get into that. But this has been really, really fun.
Excellent. As always, this is Exploring Intimacy with Jazima Davis on Sex and the Struggle. My name is Ulysses Butch Slaughter, and we'll be back next week. We got a lot to talk about. And if you feel like Tazima's been following you, she might be. And if you want to follow her, Tazima, how do people find you if they want to just turn the tables on you here?
Intimaterelating.com, and I'm going to be coming out with a lot more stuff on Facebook and social media right now. So it's .com/Tazima, and then you know, follow some of the posts that I do and check me out.
Thank you, Tazima, and to everyone tuned
in. Thank you so much.
The replay is going to be available, so check it out. It's worth listening to over and over again. Signing off, Sister Tazima. I will talk with you soon. You have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Peace.